You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Hi there. Are you a dummy?
Yes.
Do you need an expert to tell you things?
Yes.
Do you need help? Okay, never mind. Sometimes Radio 1's very own breakfast host Zach Hoffman talks to experts so us dummies can learn a thing or two. Here's an expert now.
All right, we have Anaru on the line from Porirua. Good morning to you, Anaru. How are we doing?
I'll try my best.
Is Porirua nice this time of year?
Oh, it's been lovely for the last few days. It's a bit cloudy today, but I live in Titahi Bay and the surf's been up, so you can't really complain. But yeah, no, it's been lovely for the last few days.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear. You've recently been a part of this new study, which is looking at the impact that vaping has had on the rates of smoking in Aotearoa's youth, and you're looking at it across ethnic lines. Before we delve into that study at all, I want to know, was there much smoking in your family?
No, well, it depends what side. So my immediate family, there wasn't any smoking. So that's kind of the environment I was brought up. My wider family, yes, there was smoking. My dad smoked for many years. And so yes and no. And I think I was, you know, I was never exposed to smoking, but certainly in the wider family.
Because I was wondering if that was a motivator for you to do this. Kind of like how, you know, Batman sees his parents get shot and becomes
a crime fighter. Well, I think it's... Yeah, it definitely affected the health of my father. You know, it was implicated, and he passed at an early age, and it was definitely implicated in that. I think partly to just I'm an Indigenous, I'm working research public health at University of Otago Ki Pōneke. So tobacco has been part of our story of experience of colonisation, and it's very much core to some of the key health issues that we raised. So I think that's been a big motivator for me too. It's when we talk health, it's hard to disentangle that from, you know, colonisation, and tobacco has been really central to that whole story. And so a lot of the movement around, say, the end game and trying to get rid of tobacco in Aotearoa has been through Māori leadership, and it's been around for 20 years or so. So it's a real, real strong motivator for me.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear. Smoke-free 2025, I think, is the most publicly researched and publicly led goal to reduce smoking in Aotearoa. It has a target of getting below 5% of smoking New Zealanders across all population groups. In the big picture, the rate of smoking New Zealanders has dropped about 10 points from 16.4% in 2011 to 2012 to just around 6-ish% 2023-2024. It's important to mention that daily vaping is floating around 11% in 2023-2024 as well. All things considered, are we making good on reducing smoking rates?
Well, I think it's probably close to 7% if you do the whole rounding. But the I would say that yes, we've had a really good steady decline, and it's interesting too because I've been in this area for, you know, a reasonable amount of time. And when we started, Australia was always ahead of us. We got ahead of them. I think that we had the latest stats released by government yesterday. And the government's saying, yes, it's great, this is reducing, but none of that's to do with the current government. They've literally reversed everything that we've done for. And it's a very colourblind, I would say, approach to it. It doesn't, you know, account for the fact that Pacific people still smoking daily at 10% and Māori at 15%. I find that really, you know, I find that it's a really, you know, coloured look at it. And I guess the other thing is that, you know, as I mentioned, given Māori have been a real strong advocates for getting to this sort of, you know, smoke-free goal, we're the ones that are going to get there last, and it's mainly because of the way the government has been operated. So yes, it's good. No, it's not good because there's huge inequities persisting, you know, over double, almost triple for Māori. And the other thing too is that what we're seeing is a plateauing of smoking rates as well. And I guess the other sort of side of the coin is we've seen an increase in vaping, and some people say it's great for people who smoke, who can't quit, you know, and there's evidence to suggest that that's good. But the big increase in vaping is mainly amongst our young people, you know, young youth to young adults. And the problem there is many of those people have never smoked. And so, you know, we're dealing with this real predatory industry that its model is to exploit nicotine addiction, and it's really good at doing it.
Yeah, and it's always been based off of getting people in young, because then they have lifelong clientele.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, it's an addicted population. You don't lose them. You're addicted for life. I'm not sure people who do use these products wouldn't kind of appreciate that. You know, even my partner smoked when she was young, and she still says she hasn't smoked for 20 years or so. Mm. And she still says she could easily go back to it. It's really reinforcing. So it's a nasty, nasty addictive product.
It is. I know firsthand. A great predictor of smoking in adulthood is exposure to tobacco in our youth, as we've just said. Do you think the same is true for vaping? That if you vape as an adolescent, you'll be more likely to vape far into your future lifespan?
Well, I think it's that's one of the things, when we're young and we think we're pretty bulletproof, and so you'll do it now and I'll quit later. But that's kind of how the marketing and the product depends. So I think compared to a cigarette, a vape is much less harsh because they've changed. That used to be just I can't remember what it's called, but now they've introduced nicotine salts, which makes it much easier to take in. They've got all these tasty flavors, which are appealing to young people. Unlike the earlier products, you can really easily conceal them so you don't get the big puffs and they don't stink. And you can conceal them so you can vape literally all the time. So you're vaping, not like a cigarette where you'd have to go out on the break and, at my school they went up the smoker's tree, funny enough, and some things and you got busted. But you can vape all the time, so you sip all the time. And it means that we think that the pathway from trying a vape to becoming heavily addicted is so short that by the time you realize you're on that path, it's hard to get out of it, and then you're faced with trying to get off it. And in the current climate, we've got a government that's pretty disinterested in young people's vaping, but also because of that, there's no support for them to get off the vapes. And so, I think it's hard, and you hear from young people, we want, one of our big things we want for our young people and everybody, I guess, is a sense of agency. And for Māori, we think of that at a collective level as tēnā rangatiratanga. You lose that when you become addicted to a product. And so, I think it's nasty on a lot of strands. Sorry, I've lost my train of thought. But anyway, you can bring me back
Yeah.
to it.
According to a 2-year health survey by Te Whatu Ora, the smoking rates for Māori were 17.2% and 14.7% for Pacific peoples, compared to 7.4% for those of European descent and 5% for those of Asian heritage. And that was the most recent 2-year health survey they've done. And that reflects the inequities that you've mentioned before about smoking rates. How long have these inequities been for smoking rates? Been affecting these populations, and what effect do they have on the population mortality and their health?
Well, I think the rates, the new rates, just been were announced yesterday, and there's a very kind of, if you look at it face level, it's kind of an entertaining interaction between the Prime Minister and Chris Hipkins. I'd encourage you to look at that if that interaction. That the for Māori, the problem around smoking has been recognised since, the early 20th century, when it was noted amongst some of the Māori doctors about the high rates of smoking, how that was affecting our communities. We know that, in the mid-60s, when the Surgeon General's report came out in the United States and said smoking's, funny enough, not good for you, that's when we started seeing a lot of movements. Our tobacco control activities in Aotearoa, New Zealand, really started in the 80s, but Māori tobacco control started in the early to mid-90s. And it's since around that time we actually started putting in our surveys looking at smoking rates. And we've known for at least 50 years that we've had these huge inequities in smoking. And I guess one of the problems was back then, right up until the mid-2000s, was the solution was to say, smoking's bad for you, kids. Don't smoke. It's bad for you. And, we know it's not really a good way to address the cause root of the system, which is an industry that wants young people to start using these things. So we had people like Honi Harawira and Shane Bradbrock and Dame Tariana Turia back then saying, well, we've got to stop focusing on, the people that are being affected, victim blaming effectively, and say, well, we've got to take on the industry. And that's where the Tupu Kikori movement came from. It calls for structural change. And we see it, what we're up against is a lot of global industries that really make a lot of money out of this stuff, and they're really trying to push their products. And in some ways, for Māori, we see the way they're operating as being a threat to our own sovereignty because we can't, we're trying to make decisions for our future, and then we've got this outside industry that's coming in, pushing their products and changing, literally changing government policies. And that's what we've seen with the current government, and there's really good evidence to suggest that they've been very strongly influenced by the tobacco and vaping industries.
If not entirely captured. I mean, there's kind of a revolving door of politicians and lobbyists. There's
Absolutely, yeah.
Also the legislation that they stopped the legislation to pause tobacco sales for those born after 2008. They've also given a $300 million in tax breaks to Philip Morris. I mean, you can't really get much nicer than that.
No, you can't, and it's a big reason why we, just this week we were awarded the Dirty Ashtray Award, and there was a a study of, there's an ongoing report about tobacco industry interference. And so Aotearoa has traditionally been very high around the 2 to 3 level mark. And I think we as people in this country like to think we've got a really good democracy, it's fair and all that. I think the actions of the current government really challenge our thinking, because there's lots of things like the regulatory impacts. I mean, I'm getting off topic here, but 97% of people opposed in submissions to the regulatory standards bill, yet they still passed it. And I'm not sure where democracy sits in that, but similar for this sort of legislation is we see that, but New Zealand's dropped 53 points, 53 countries in this tobacco industry interference index, and that's phenomenal. And the government's response is to try and discredit the report, and it's like, where do they get the evidence from? You know, the associate minister was quoted as, you know, around the tobacco industry, you know, reducing the tax that you talked about with Philip Morris, that she had independent advice and good evidence, and when asked, she couldn't provide anything coherent. You know, it's just, you know, if it's not acting on evidence and it's not acting on the will of the people, then, you know, you really do wonder whose interests they are acting on.
Yeah, best government money can buy is what I've heard.
Yes.
With this new study, there's been nearly 700,000 year 10 students aged 14 to 15 years. You and your colleagues have found that the dropping smoking rates really slowed down with the introduction of vaping. I think around 2010 was when vaping came in, and the smoking rates beforehand were dropping quite steadily, and then as soon as vaping comes in, really takes its time to drop. We've seen pronounced excesses of regular smoking among Māori, Pacifica and European youth. In other words, vaping is not displacing smoking amongst youth. That's correct.
Yeah, so I think the survey this was based on was a survey conducted by ASH, and it's called the ASH Snapshot Year 10 Survey. It's been going for a long time. And so what we looked at was there have been claims in some studies that saying, hey, look, the introduction of vapes is great because it displaces smoking, not only amongst young people who smoke, but amongst young people. And we've written previously saying, well, that's a bit of a fatalistic, and in some ways, it's called a base rate fallacy, where you assume that the change is going to happen on something that's already happening. So what this study was we looked at putting numbers, and we worked with colleagues in Australia who are very interested in this sort of thing. And we said, okay, we looked at the rates of reducing before 2010, did some of the analyses because it really exploded in 2018. Looked at the rates of smoking that was the trajectory back then, and then compared it to the rates, actual rates once vapes were introduced. And what we found was actually smoking rates didn't reduce as much as they would have otherwise. And there might be other factors at play, but it really flies in the face of this idea that vapes are a great thing for young people. And it's like, no, I don't think so. And I think most people would agree that vapes aren't a great thing. And, you know, the way that the industry sort of, you know, it's like a predatory industry on young people, and as you mentioned, trying to recruit lots of young people into their fold, I guess.
And their marketing as well.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, and there's some evidence that suggests that that people who use vapes, it's like a gateway to smoking and some other substances. And, you know, we all know that you can put lots of things in your vapes, and so there's other stuff that might end up in there. But the, I guess the issue too, and is we're hearing anecdotally, we've got a new study going to field at the moment. We're seeing a lot of young people switch between smokes and vapes, and there's new research coming out that suggests that actually if you dual use, it's just as bad for you, if not worse actually, than just smoking cigarettes. So,
yeah.
It's not great, and I think it really challenges, you know, this kind of, I think one of the challenges we have is it's the when the smoke-free, you know, we call it tupeka kore, which is, you know, a tobacco-free Aotearoa. I think smoke-free is kind of an appropriation of that because it just tends to focus on the smoking, and I think that's been partly a tactic of the industry because they like, you know, oh yeah, we'll get rid of smokes, like, you know, PMI says we'll get rid of smokes, while at the same time trying to introduce all the other nicotine products, and it's kind of a strategy for that. So I think there's been this division when vapes got introduced, is whether are they a good thing or are they a bad thing? And so, you know, we try and look at having a discussion about whether it's a good or a bad thing, and there's lots of different perspectives on it. It's important, but in some ways it's we think the industry exploits that and creates a sort of false dichotomy where you're either for or against, and we don't see it that way. And it's really been pushed around arguments around this thing, the idea of harm reduction. They say tobacco harm reduction, which has really been challenged as an industry line because it says, yes, reduce going to vapes is reducing harm because you're not smoking, which is great for the industry that's trying to probably get out of cigarettes anyway and vapes. And so, and it pushes that line. It's probably in some ways appropriate because when we talk harm reduction in other fields, say, with illicit drugs and stuff like that, it's a much different meaning. We talk about social harms, we talk about psychological harms, all that sort of thing. But this one just narrowed on the physical harm, which is undeniable, but I think it's really appropriated this idea of what harm means. And if we talk to young people, this is one of the really thing that grinds my axe is that young people have presented on this repeatedly about how they see cigarettes and vapes harming them. For many young people, I mean, I think the rates are down probably below 3% now for the general population, high for Māori. But they don't see many young people smoking, but what they see is vaping. That's the harm, and they see harm from that. And when nobody's, the politicians aren't listening to them, in 20 to 30 years' time, they're going to be looking at what the hell are we doing now? Because sure, we might get rid of cigarettes, but now we've got this massive addicted population of vapes, which aren't harmless. They've still got harm attached to them, and probably much more harmful than many other products that are available. But we just, we're prioritizing smokers, people who smoke, which is really important. But this, to a degree, there's a balance at the expense of young people, and I think that's a really important vote, an issue. And I'd say one of the real key messages, around that, if young people's voices are getting drowned out, then we're at all possible vote this year because it's, getting young voters out there will probably make a big difference.
I want to touch on that note of harm reduction because in the study it notes that harm reduction is always voiced in or placed in biomedical terms, which at least for Māori and Pacifica groups who are more likely to be consuming nicotine products, doesn't take into the social, cultural, psychological harms from nicotine. Why are these dimensions really important in this debate when it comes to Māori specifically?
Well, I think the, like I say, that we can't forget about the physical harm that tobacco presents. So especially for Māori, we have and probably still do have some of the highest lung cancer rates on the planet, and it's largely because of smoking. But I think for Māori, we often talk about, we have a very biomedical model, and there's a very strong sector within, the tobacco research area that's very, sciencey, medical sciences focused, which is great. And they look at this stuff and they say, oh, it causes all these health effects, which is important. But there's also a broader idea of what well-being and harm means. And for Māori, we think about the psychological harm in terms of, a loss of agency at an individual level and at a collective level, a loss of sovereignty, and that's a really important harm. One of the key ideas we want to sort of put out there is that, well, it's not an idea, it's a fact that the industry's profit model is based on exploiting nicotine addiction. That's the profit model. So whatever product they can get their nicotine in, like gummy bears and drinks, which is plausible at the moment, the new products around oral nicotine tobacco, which they're trying to get into New Zealand, which are already here illicitly, they're out there trying to exploit. And exploitation is inherently harmful. It takes away your agency, but also takes away the control of the people. Like we've got, look, what we've seen is an industry that's exploited our own government to, to get their goals, which is repeal the legislation and get more vaping products out there. I'm not against vaping products per se, but I really challenge the idea that these things are recreational or lifestyle products. They're not. Once you become addicted to a product, it's an addiction. It's not a lifestyle or something like that. It's an addictive product. And so if they're to be available at all, they must be regarded as a therapy, not available on every street corner, literally. And in fact, I can go on my road and there's a specialist vape retailer on the corner, and you go down the street and there's three shops side by side that they're all selling vapes. One of them's got R18 on the outside, but it's still a dairy and young people go into it. So tell me that's not being exploitative. Good Lord. So,
How are we doing for time, Anaru? Do you have much more time?
I'm all good. Yeah, so as long as you need.
But, no worries. I just had one or two more questions. The study noted that despite Māori and Pacific adolescents not being disproportionately affected compared to European youth when it comes to the relationship between vaping and smoking, it shouldn't be interpreted as a neutral outcome as it reflects a hollow form of equity. Could you elaborate on what that hollow form of equity means?
Well, I think the I guess it's multiple levels. Like I said sort of earlier, it's The government's a little bit colorblind to the inequities. They always present this as, great, we're down to 7%, which is, it's good. I think you can't deny that, but there's still enormous inequities within that. The other one is that the fact that we've got more rangatahi Māori vaping. So I think the vaping rate amongst all youth, or maybe not, I can't remember what the stats are, around 10% anyway, but for Māori youth, our vaping rate's from 20% amongst all Māori youth, and then Māori females 25%. So to put that in perspective, we did another study. Sorry, I'm getting off the bit, but I'll come back to that. In another study we were involved with, we looked at the vaping rates amongst young adults, and this was part of an international study. So we've got the US, Canada, UK, I think Australia's in there as well. And we compared our vaping rates to their vaping rates, and so. And we're doing this with Canadian colleagues, and they put on the US and Canadian and American. We thought the American and England, actually, that's the other one, that the English rates would be the highest, but our rates were way higher than theirs for the
Really?
general population. When you put Māori, which are way higher again, that puts us probably in the highest vaping rates on the planet.
Oof.
So that says something about what's going on in our country at the moment.
It
So.
does, yeah.
There's really real concern in England, in Canada and all that about vaping rates, but our vaping rates are really high. And we've got different circumstances. But getting back to the equity thing, I think the idea that a vape, we have heard it said that vaping is a great thing because it displaces, like I said, smoking among young people, especially for Māori, so that's good. And it's like, well, why is it good? Because we've got these such high rates of vaping, and the smoking rates are getting so low now that we're almost at the point where we can get rid of it. I do think, especially the current with the latest figures and the way that the government in some ways is, implicitly endorsing cigarettes, I guess you could say, is that we might see a resurgence. So I've noticed a lot more smoking in music videos
In film,
and film and all
tons of
that. In
films,
fact,
yep. Yep.
you watch, I'm really always surprised, mainstream TV, it's coming back quite high. And then I
It
was
is.
watching a movie the other day, and there was actually literally a product placement of a company's cigarette packet there, because you could tell what company it was, and that never happens, especially without the consent or the promotion of the company itself. So I think it's coming, it looks like it's coming back again, or it's finding its way in. I think, there's this might be this mystique of smoking, it somehow, shows that you're independent and moody and all that sort of thing. That's a real cliche that we hoped we got rid of back a long time ago, but it comes back, and I think we've got to be really wary that these aren't, those images aren't, often aren't there by accident, and we've got to be careful that we don't regurgitate them to our own people and create this problem again.
Completely. I just have one last question, and that is, clearly we've painted a scenario where we're not aligned with Te Tiriti o Waitangi at all,
No.
with these horrible smoking and vaping inequities. How can we make public policy that aligns with our Te Tiriti o Waitangi obligations, our commitments under the United Nations Declarations on the Rights of Indigenous People, and the World Health Organization Framework Convention on Tobacco Control?
Well, I think that's a really important point. I think at the moment, there's this the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control was signed back in the early 2000s, and so one of the was the first, and I think there might be only one other convention on public health, around a public health issue around smoking. And so Aotearoa New Zealand was in there signing very early. We actually were involved with proposing indigenous clauses in that to make sure that indigenous peoples were part of decision making, and also part of making sure that, that the interventions were effective. So I think there's one point, and at the moment, the COP, which is the Conference of the Parties, are meeting right now to discuss that, and that's where they announced that New Zealand hasn't done particularly well. So I think that's a big fail. I think within Aotearoa New Zealand, we've got this broader context of a government that's very hostile to, I would say, Māori, hostile to, a lot of people who aren't very conservative, hostile to young people, I'd say, because they actively, aren't keen on raising the age, lowering the age of voting. So that's a broader context that we need to consider. But for your point, I think one of the key things is ensuring that Māori are part of the, decision making and formulation of these ideas the whole way through. So it's not something that's done on Māori, it's done with Māori, because remember, the whole end game sort of started with Māori advocates saying we've got to do something that addresses essentially inequities in smoking. Inequity is something that there's a difference and that's entirely preventable. And what we've seen is an appropriation of this Tupeka Kōrero idea to be smoke-free, to only include smoking and to exclude Māori decision-making through the whole process as well. So we've got to include Māori in the formulation of the ideas, the policy, the implementation of when it comes to implement. I think also to make this stuff actually work, it's got to be really well enforced. What we've seen in Australia is like a proliferation of illicit networks of tobacco and other nicotine products. We don't quite have that here. We don't think we've got an illicit network here, but it's entirely plausible if the government doesn't get on top of it that we could, for lots of different reasons. And there's some people that think that it's partly to do with the industry likes doing that. So say if we really do push and get through some strong legislation, if we did get a change in government, then and the government brings in new legislation, then we're going to get a huge pushback by the industry because it's literally the existential threat to their profit, and so that they'll take us on, which I think someone's got to do it. So I think we should do it, and especially given the reason is that it's harming not only Māori, but it's harming young people and harming young people's futures as well.
I think those are very, very smart words to leave this kōrero on. Thank you so much for coming on the program, Anaru. I really appreciate your time.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Thank
Hope
you,
that was
mate.
useful.
Take care, and I hope that the next government listens to you.
Thank
Ka
you.
kite. All right, folks, that was Professor Anaru Wah. We're talking to him about that new study which reveals that, in fact, vaping is not displacing smoking, especially for our young Pacifica and Māori populations, where smoking inequities have already existed, and for Māori, those inequities existing since the 19th century, which is absurd, and that is a storied history right there. We're going to be playing one.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcasts.